Thank you so much, Jerry, for the guided meditation. What a great way to begin the morning. And as you say, it's a really nice alternative to the stress in the world. And it's really nice to see you. I missed being able to join you for the first two Sundays of this month. But it was for a good reason because I was on retreat at Cloud Mountain. So I felt very close to all of you and close to the Oxfording pictures. I think, as many of you know, being on retreat is kind of like living the Oxfording pictures 24/7. So they're very up in my mind and my heart. And as Jerry said, I'm Lyndall, one of the Sims local Dharma leaders. And I'll be talking this week about the sixth of the ox herding pictures, riding the ox home. And for those of you who are newer, this ox herding picture series, we've been following this all year. This is our theme, these 10 Zen ox herding pictures that give a kind of a story of the way our practice and our understanding can unfold. But before I start my talk, I'd like to give you a chance to remember and reconnect with this sixth picture and verse. So, Jerry, could you put the Oxfording picture up on the screen? Okay. So here we are. Taking a few moments just to look at the picture. See what kind of thoughts and feelings it brings up for you. And I'll read the verse, and you can do the same with that. So, riding the ox home. Mounting the bull slowly, I return homeward. The voice of my flute intones through the evening. Measuring with hand beats the pulsating harmony, I direct the endless rhythm. Whoever hears this melody will join me. So, Jerry, you can stop the screen sharing now. Had a chance to kind of remember that picture. So I know that over the last couple of weeks, you've heard various talks about this picture from Lauren and from Suze, and also from Tweri, if you attend the Monday night Sims gathering. And I think in these talks, everybody has said something about how this picture shows a place where the ox herder is beginning to feel a real sense of ease and joy, a connection, harmony with the ox, riding along happily, playing the flute. But everyone has also talked about this picture in their own unique way and brought up different aspects of it. For example, Lauren mentioned how the beautiful qualities of the mind begin to flower in this picture. Tweri talked about how the picture reflects a sense of embodiment and being fully in the present moment. And last week, Suze reminded us that to reach this place of true ease, we must understand something about the three characteristics, which maybe the ox herder doesn't quite fully understand as yet in this picture. So today I'll share some of my reactions and reflections to the picture and the poem. And I think these will be complementary to what has been said before, but once again, they will have their own little differences in expression. And then during the discussion period, you'll have a chance to share your own responses. And I hope that the diversity of views that we're presenting here as teachers will help you to get a more complete picture of this ox herding picture, and also to trust your own wisdom as you respond to the pictures and realize that they're really multifaceted and there's no single way to look at them. So you can really, you know, take to heart what these pictures bring up for you. So now, if you remember when we were looking at the fifth picture last month, the ox herder was working very carefully to tame the ox, to keep it right on the straight and narrow. And now in this picture number six, you might say that we're seeing how all of this hard work to tame the ox is starting to really pay off. Things are starting to come together in a new and effortless way in picture number six. Instead of leading the ox and trying to tame it, the ox herder is riding on the ox's back. And the two are connected, working together in harmony. And the ox herder isn't really worrying about where the ox is going. This concern has disappeared. The ox herder is just riding along, playing his flute, tranquil and happy, and sensing the ox is going where it needs to go. Or maybe, as Lauren suggested at the beginning of the month, and I think Twary has mentioned too, that maybe the ox herder is guiding it a little bit, but just with the very gentlest touch. So in terms of practice, this picture represents to me a stage where the practice has gotten to the point where it almost is going by itself. There are different ways we might express this. We might say we have a strong continuity of mindfulness or strong concentration, a sense of connection with the present moment, a feeling of embodiment. You can choose the description that fits your own experience best. They're all pointing to the same kind of thing. And however you describe it, it's a place where there may be lots of joy, lots of ease, and lots of tranquility. And we can think about this as a stage we go through in our formal meditation practice, and also as a stage we experience in our daily life as our practice matures. Now, as I've done before this month, I looked at some of the commentaries that different Zen teachers have provided for this picture. And what I found was really kind of interesting. It seemed that several of them really emphasized this stage as representing what we experience in daily life. It's sort of like, well, the fifth picture was showing all that the work we're doing, all of the work we're doing on the cushion. The sixth picture shows how this is starting to really flower and beginning to come to fruition. So in his book, Riding the Ox Home, John Dido Lori says this stage is a place where we begin to navigate the complexities of our life with ease and effortless activity. And he says that a sense of unity with the myriad phenomena and events in our lives begins to appear. And there is an appreciation of the nature of each moment. And Martine Batchelor says something kind of similar, talking about this stage as an image of ease, leisure, and freedom. And at this stage, she says, we start to take ourselves less seriously and enjoy life much more as we open to its changing and ever-fluctuating nature. As we accept ourselves and the world, our potential unfolds, fear and insecurities dissolve, and we can express ourselves through music, painting, poetry, cooking, gardening, etc., etc. Everything we do can become an art. It's not a duty anymore. It's a way to express our true nature. So, I mean, that's a beautiful sense of this picture. And also the Columbia University commentary that goes along with the set of pictures we're using says something, the same kind of thing too. That this verse suggests that the ox herder or the practitioner has been freed from old fears and anxieties and can now express their creative energies in celebration of life, Now, wow, this all sounds really wonderful, doesn't it? And I think this is definitely a valid way and a really helpful way to look at this picture as an illustration of how, as we continue in our practice, the work on the cushion begins to manifest itself in our daily lives. We do begin to feel more of a sense of ease, ability to be with ourselves and with the conditions of our life as they are. And so the descriptions that these commentators have given, they're really inspiring, and they're also, affirming of what we may be experiencing. There's a sense that this is the direction our practice is heading, and that's truly inspiring and beautiful. And it's also something to recognize and celebrate in the ways that we're already experiencing it. And that's really important because so often we don't notice the moments of joy and peace that we feel in our sitting practice or just in our daily life every day. Or maybe we dismiss them as being not dramatic enough or not important enough. Or we're so busy worrying about our faults and difficulties that we don't notice them. But we really should notice them. It really shows us that these qualities are already part of us and they're accessible to us. So it's very important to recognize the arising of these beautiful, easeful qualities within us. And yet, at the same time, as Suze reminded us last week, all of this ease and freedom in this picture, they seem almost too good to be true, don't they? And if we're wise, we realize that we won't always feel this kind of ease, freedom, and tranquility. Difficult things are still going to happen in our lives, and we're still going to feel their pain. And those fears and anxieties, they may still surface from time to time. So it's not like we get to this nice, easy place and we stay there forever. But I think it's probably fair to say that when these painful and difficult times do come, because of our practice, we're better equipped to deal with them in a way that's going to be wise and compassionate towards ourselves. So I think that's something to important to remember too. Now, another way to look at this picture, and one I was a little bit surprised not to see more of in these Zen commentaries, is to see it as a stage we go through in our formal meditation practice. And this was the association that came up for me when I first looked at this picture, that came up first. And it made me think of a state of mind that we experience, from time to time in our daily practice, but especially when we're on retreat or doing a, some kind of longer period of practice after we had maybe some days or hours of continuous practice. It's a stage when the momentum of mindfulness has had time to really build up, and we're feeling some concentration or samadhi, if you want to use those words. These are really developing. And we start to experience some of the effects of this. We might have feelings of rapture and bliss, maybe emotional or maybe in the body too, pleasant sensations that are pulsating with harmony, maybe just like the oxherder's flute and the flute's rhythm. Or we might have strong feelings of peace and tranquility. Sometimes when we're feeling, this way, we feel like if we're on retreat, we could just sit for hours with no problem. The body is so comfortable and tranquil. And this is a wonderful, fabulous, fantastic place to be. And we all love it when this happens. We love it, of course. And we can also think of this process in terms of the seven factors of enlightenment. We've spent a lot of time cultivating mindfulness, investigation, putting in effort. Our concentration has gotten stronger, our steadiness, our continuity, and we're seeing the benefits in terms of joy and tranquility. And this can also be a time when this strong samadhi or concentration gives us a kind of protection from the hindrances of craving and aversion and sleepiness and restlessness and doubt. All those difficult emotions, you know, at least temporarily, because we're in such a nice, good, concentrated state, we aren't experiencing these difficult emotions so much. Now, it's great and wonderful when these mind states arise in practice, as I've said before, and it's something to really be appreciated and that we should enjoy and be grateful for. And in fact, too, when these experiences come, the feelings can be so wonderful and so overwhelming that sometimes we think, oh, wow, I've arrived. This is what I've been looking for. This is the peace and the joy I've been seeking. I'm here. But we have to remember, you know, this is only the sixth picture. So even if it feels like we're there, we still really aren't there yet. And in our Theravada tradition, I think this is one of the things that we're generally taught and that's emphasized, that these beautiful mind states of rapture and tranquility are wonderful and they're great and they're a sign of, you know, good practice, but they're not the final goal. And the view is like what's happening at this point is that the mind has come to a place where there's enough peace and enough stability so that we can really open to deeper insights. And I think these Zen Oxfording pictures, where while they don't sort of talk about this very explicitly, they're suggesting the same thing, because with the Oxfording pictures too, there's yet more to be seen. There's something to come even beyond this peaceful, joyful, tranquil state, riding along on the ox playing the flute. The ox herder is on his way home, but he isn't quite there yet. It appears then that even when we get to this picture, where things look so lovely and beautiful and wonderful, there are important insights even here that the ox herder hasn't experienced yet. And I think this is one of the things that Suze was suggesting last week, that as lovely as things look in picture number 6, without some real insight and understanding of the three characteristics of dukkha or suffering and unsatisfactoriness, of anicca or impermanence, and of anatta or of not self, this ease and freedom that we see in picture number 6 isn't really going to last. It's true that the ox herder is experiencing a lot of freedom and ease, and in no way should we discount this or diminish it. It's really wonderful and important. But if we're looking at this picture through this lens of formal practice, you might say it represents a place where there's freedom and ease because we're temporarily in a state of strong concentration, strong mindfulness. Something wonderful, something to be cultivated for sure. And yet there's more to be seen and understood beyond this. A more lasting freedom that's based on wisdom. And we're getting there, but we aren't quite there yet. John Dido Laurie put it really nicely in his book when he says that this stage in picture number 6 is where we're seeing the fruits of our practice, but those fruits are not yet ripe and fully mature. So I kind of like that sense that we're really seeing some of the wonderful things unfolding, and yet we're not quite there, we're not quite fully mature. And I think that one of the things that the ox herder may not know or see, well, there's several things, but one of these is that we notice there's still some duality in this picture. There's the ox herder and there's the ox. They're very harmonious and interconnected and they're working together, but they're still two distinct beings. So if true understanding is unity, we're not quite at that place yet. And this might be another way of saying what Suze especially last week suggested, and I think Lauren also mentioned a little bit, that at this stage the ox herder may not yet have a complete understanding of this anatta or not self. The ox herder is still identifying as, I'm the ox herder who has tamed and is riding the ox home. And in her Monday night talk, Tori also mentioned another place where this understanding isn't complete, a kind of a related place, in that at this stage, there's not complete integration. So that's another way of putting it. You know, the ox herder or the practitioner may understand some things, but they're not really fully incorporated into their understanding and into their daily life. So maybe a person might feel at this point that, you know, they can have these beautiful mind states on retreat, but they can't have it in everyday life. It's like they have to choose between one or the other. And also, there might be another kind of delusion in this picture. I mentioned it a little bit before, but it's this, that the state of mind in picture six might be so lovely that the ox herder gets caught up in it and forgets that this wonderful state of mind might not last forever. Well, in fact, it isn't going to last forever. Let's just be frank. And when we were discussing this picture to help plan our talks for this month, Suze pointed out that if you look at the ox, it has a bit of a sneaky expression in its eyes. Maybe an expression that suggests, ox herder, you're sitting there so happy and so peaceful. You know, you really have no idea what might be around the next corner. And now I know not everybody will agree that the ox has the expression, but if he does, he might be pointing to something that the ox herder doesn't realize, that this state too, this wonderful, enjoyable state, also will change and there's more to be seen and understood. In other words, the ox herder may not understand or might be forgetting about impermanence and the dukkha that goes with it. Now, of course, when we're in this lovely, tranquil, joyful stage, this isn't something we want to hear. I mean, this state is so pleasant and so wonderful, it's really easy to get attached. We want it to continue forever. We want more of it. So when things start to change, you know, maybe because our concentration wanes a bit or something happens in our environment to disrupt things, or because we start wishing for more and worrying about whether this beautiful state will last instead of just being mindfulness, well, we might get ourselves caught up in a world of hurt. And I certainly know that world of hurt myself from my own experience when I've had really lovely meditation experiences and gotten all entwined in them. And maybe some of you have had that feeling too. And when we find that, when we get up in that condition, we can also get caught up in this vicious cycle of trying and trying to get back to that peace and tranquility over and over. And that's not a happy place to be in either, and it's actually very far from the ease that we're seeking. So, well, this stage of practice is wonderful and beautiful, and when we experience it, we should appreciate it and celebrate it, and we should also look for signs of it in our daily life. As some of these Zen commentators have suggested, it has its pitfalls and its delusions too, and we should recognize that our understanding, even at this stage, is not yet complete. Now, this isn't because we're doing anything wrong, and I really want to emphasize that. It's not because we're doing something wrong that we aren't complete and there are still delusions and pitfalls. It's more because at this stage, you know, the ox herder, the practitioner, ourselves at this stage, it's simply because we haven't seen all there is yet to be seen. And I think that Sue's suggested some of these things that we may be needing to see more deeply, different aspects of the three characteristics. And some of these things, you know, we understand when we understand, we see when we see. So just, you know, a sense that we can't know what we don't know yet. There's still more to this journey into the mystery. So with that thought, let's sit together for a few moments. And I'd like to close with a poem by the Zen master Fa Yen, which I think kind of expresses the feeling of this sixth picture. A bird in a secluded grove sings like a flute. Willows sway gracefully with their golden threads. The mountain valley grows the quieter as the clouds return. A breeze brings along the fragrance of the apricot flowers. For a whole day I have sat here, encompassed by peace, till my mind is cleansed in and out of all cares and idle thoughts. I wish to tell you how I feel, but words fail me. If you come to this grove, we can compare notes. So many thanks to you for your kind attention today. And now we'll have some group discussion. Okay, well, hello, everybody, and welcome back. I think pretty much everybody is back that is coming back. So now we have some time for comments, questions, sharing. If anyone would like to say anything about their group discussion or about the talk, you can let me know that you would like to speak by putting up your little reaction hand in the reactions. And then you can unmute yourself and go ahead and say what you would like to say. Okay, Sean and Bruce.
Well, I appreciate your talk so much, Lyndall, because it helped me understand why I feel disconnected with this picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because in the beginning of getting involved in this practice, I was looking so much for those peaceful, blissful states because I was in such a place of suffering that that's what brought me to practice. And so then, of course, there was a lot of attachment and wanting. And when those states came and thinking that was it, you know, oh, this is the purpose. This is the end game here. And when I look at this picture, I see myself up there on the bull playing the flute. Oh, this is really great, you know. Mm-hmm. And I look at the bull, and the bull's like head is like close to the ground. And the bull to me looked like it had been beaten into submission. But now it looks like the bull is really grounded. And so when you were giving your talk, I was thinking, yeah, there's the missing piece, or the next piece maybe, because I haven't looked ahead in the pictures, is maturity of practice. Is that it's not, enjoy the bliss, yes, but it's not about the bliss. Mm-hmm. And we kind of talked about this in our group. And then I remembered Ajahn Sumedho's talk, which was, it's like this. Oh, I'm feeling angry. Anger is like this. This is what's going on. Any state is where that's the end game, being able to be mm-hmm. with the states that I'm in. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen next. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Very well put. And I think that experience of looking for bliss and peace and tranquility and thinking that this is it when it starts to come. I mean, that was my experience in practice too. And it took a while before I really understood that, no, you know, this is fine, this is nice, but that isn't really what it's all about. And so I think as we continue, we sort of see that there has to be something else going on besides just getting to the place where you're happily on the bowl playing your flute. So, yeah, thank you. You really expressed that really nicely, Sean. Anybody else? If you're ready to speak, you can just maybe wave your hand like this and then go ahead and unmute. Suze?
So during my sharing, I realized that not only do I need to go back to the three characteristics, I need to go back to the eightfold path of the first one of wise view, that there are views that I bring along, like my skepticism, that is a barrier. It's one of those delusions or one of those barriers to fully experience being one with the ox and the experience and all of that. So, you know, it's humbling to remember that you got to go back to like the beginning, or this person, I'm really seeing that I hold on to some of these views that then affect how I experience and how open I am to what is up. And so it was another good, humbling experience about, and thanks for your talk.
Oh, you're welcome. Suze, you make me think about that quote that has come up before with the Zen teacher saying that practice is one continuous mistake. Because I don't think you're alone. I mean, I feel like that too. Like I'm always having to go back to the very beginning. And I also would say that a little of your skepticism, you know, I was able to listen to your talk before I gave mine. And some of that skepticism is really well founded because just as you pointed out to us last week, it isn't all sweetness and light forever. So that's good to remember. So, yeah. But anyway, we always are coming back to beginner's mind. The longer I practice, the more I feel like that's true. Anybody else? Well, maybe one more, and then I want to make sure I turn it over to Jerry so he has time for everything.
Lauren has a hand up.
Oh, Lauren, yes.
Unmute, Lauren.
Okay. No, I just wanted to say that what often happens, well, what really happens with me is the self. That the self, I think that, oh, I've gotten to this great place. I have some great ease in my daily life, or I experience peace and this kind of deeper concentration in my practice. And that attachment and just the ego, and I just will see the contrast of this very muddy, gunky self popping up, and it's not easy to let go of the self. It just, so I think your talk about the duality and the self being there and the fact that we're on picture six and we still have four more to go, it's not a one-step process. So no, that's no. what I was remembering. Thank you.
Thank you. No, it's not a one-step process. And I think those roots of those views go so deeply that it really takes time. So on that note, we didn't quite end as soon as I hoped, but I'm going to turn it over to Jerry so he can give us announcements and closing. So thank you all.